go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing. Go on with the dreamer. All the people in the street. And the summer's almost here. Got to go outside in the fresh air and walk while it's still clear. Breathing in all the way down till your stomach too. Read the lies of the region.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Spurczynski, co-chief negotiator for the SSA national contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Spurczynski said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Spurczynski added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Spurczynski said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. for some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
This is a big time for America. It's not just another election, not merely about a list of issues, even though some of those issues are huge, including the deliberate downsizing of our middle class and the deadly war of lies in Iraq. What's at stake on November 2nd is the very idea of America itself, the historic idea that we might actually build a society based on our egalitarian ideals of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. The moneyed elites, presently working through Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld and company, have decided that America should no longer bother pursuing egalitarianism. They are asserting a new ethic of privilege, declaring that the role of government is to take care of the good fortunes of the few and not worry about the well-being of the many. In their view, they're the top dogs and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants. Wielding their administrative blowtorches and legislative monkey wrenches, they're jerry-rigging America's rules so that money and power flow uphill, out of our neighborhoods, into their corporate suites and offshore bank accounts. They're seizing control of every decision that affects our lives, from wages to taxation, from what's in your dinner to what's in your daily news feed, from who goes to college to who goes to war. They're turning our America, our democracy, into their America of plutocracy and autocracy. As I travel around the country, I find that most people are aware that something fundamental has gone wrong, that this is not the America they thought they were born into. I recently saw an old pickup truck with a bumper sticker that asked, "Where are we going? And what am I doing in this handbasket?" People know that we're being led down some rabbit trail off of America's true path toward egalitarianism. This is Jim Hightower saying, I believe we're in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about. It's a big time for America. Time to take our country back.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend. Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius Satellite Radio Network. And also streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Up to, 98, 103 countries now listening regularly to the program. It's really, technology is amazing. Isn't it incredible? And technology, the internet and all this stuff is part of the new media, some would say. And therefore, I thought it would be interesting to get Richard Viguerie on. Richard Viguerie is the author of a book called America's Right Turn, How Conservatives Use New and Alternative Media to Take Power. And, before I get to that, should you want to call in, if you have a question for Richard or comments, our number 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. The website, TomHartman.com, if you wanted to drop into our chat room, which is already well-populated. Richard Viguerie, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Thank you. I remember back in the 70s, in the late 70s, reading stories about you as the new whiz kid who was going to make Ronald Reagan president with direct mail. Am I misremembering, or are you that guy?
Well, I like to say sometimes it's my grandfather, but no, it's me.
Yeah.
I like to think that maybe I made a little difference here or there, and different times people get credit for electing Ronald Reagan, but quite frankly, Ronald Reagan elected himself. You can run alongside a freight train and push it, you know, but Ronald Reagan was a freight train. The rest of it is kind of pushing it, and I'm not sure if we made any difference at all. Although I will say, Tom, that the new and alternative media, when I refer to it in my book, America's Right Turn, means primarily direct mail, talk radio, cable television, and the Internet. And when I got involved in politics in the late 50s or early 60s, conservatives felt that we were shut out of the national media. We didn't have access to the New York Times, CBS, ABC, NBC, Washington Post, Time Magazine. So rather than just kind of as a Catholic charity, the Christophers say, don't curse the darkness, light a candle. So we began to figure out how we can go around that blockage that we were experiencing on the microphones of this country and go right into people's homes. And our first candle that we lit was direct mail. And Ronald Reagan, in my opinion, could not have been elected president as effective a speaker and powerful a speaker as he was without direct mail, because he had 250,000 small donors, people who gave him $5, $10, $25, $50. And the conservative movement was his base, and people, organizations like the Moral Majority, Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum, different gun organizations, social organizations, all relied on direct mail to get their membership, raise their money, etc. So direct mail made all the difference for conservatives. But then after that, talk radio, cable television, the Internet has brought us to the table and brought us to a position of influence and power that we have today.
Yeah, just to wrap it up about Ronald Reagan, I mean, it seems to me, having been fairly aware at that time, living through that time, Jimmy Carter, my recollection is Jimmy Carter was way ahead in the polls. In fact, Ronald Reagan was viewed as kind of a conservative extremist by many folks, sort of the reincarnation of Barry Goldwater in some ways. And what really put Reagan over the top was the hostages being held. I mean, isn't that couldn't you accurately say that Carter got wiped out by the hostages rather than the Reagan won?
Well, that made a huge difference, Tom. But when an incumbent president is running for re-election, he in essence is asking the voters to rehire him, and that's the decision in essence, without the voters necessarily thinking of it in those terms. That's the process they go through. Do they want to rehire this chief executive officer for another 4 years? And in my opinion, through most of the 80s, if not sooner than that, American people had said they really are not crazy about having Jimmy Carter as president for another 4 years. And the main thing, whoever his opponent was before Reagan's nomination, of course, George Bush the 41st was running, Bob Dole, Howard Baker, John Conley, all of these people were trying to get the Republican nomination, and whoever got the nomination had to be convincing that they could be a effective chief executive officer for the next 4 years. People didn't have to necessarily agree with them on all the issues or even most of the issues. They just had decided they wanted to fire Carter, and they had to feel comfortable about his successor.
Yeah, and it looks like we're kind of coming around to the same kind of discussion right now. Now, in your news release here, as it were, you say that the CBS network should be banned from moderating any of the upcoming presidential debates. You said Dan Rather and CBS have acted in a flagrantly partisan manner. Actually, before we get to that, let me just ask you one other question, something you just raised. Pardon my jumping around here, but you said the conservatives had not had access to mainstream media yet. I worked on the Goldwater campaign in 64. I mean, he was certainly getting a lot of publicity. I remember when Russell Kirk's book, I mean, I was only 2 years old when it came out in 53, the conservative mind. But that book, you know, had a big influence on a lot of people, William F. Buckley among them. I remember Buckley's firing line, used to watch it religiously. My recollection is that the conservative movement, at least the conservative movement that grew out of Russell Kirk's kind of reinvention of it, and not so much maybe the fringe movement that came out of Ayn Rand's stuff, but the old-fashioned conservative movement, the reinvention of Edmund Burke that Kirk founded, really had pretty good access to the media. I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan became president. Barry Goldwater became his nominee. How can you say that they were frozen out?
I would disagree, Tom. To the extent that the media covered us, it was in a very negative way. Yeah, Goldwater got a lot of publicity. But he, myself, Ronald Reagan, Bill Buckley, we were referred to sometimes blatantly, sometimes by inference, that we were neo-Nazis, we were anti-Semites, we were nutcases. When Barry Goldwater was nominated, people like George Meany, Pat Brown, Governor of California, Democrat politicians up and down the line talked about they hear the hobnail boots of the Nazis marching down the street. They smell the stench of Nazism. It was terrible days. Walter Cronkite in 1963, after John Kennedy was assassinated, said that Barry Goldwater today had no comment. Well, that was a blatant lie, and we couldn't call him on it. Barry Goldwater was at his mother-in-law's funeral at that time, and it was just a false statement. No one had ever asked Goldwater to comment, but we did not have bloggers in those days or talk radio or cable television to say, Walter Cronkite, you've just perpetrated a falsehood. That is not a correct statement. Dan Rather tries that now, and because of the new and alternative media that we talk about in our book, he's called on it. No telling how many false and incorrect statements the national media has perpetrated on American people over the years, but there was no ability to call them on it.
So, Richard Vigor, you're suggesting that the conservative movement has now found its voice, and in fact, it has taken control of the United States Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the White House as a result of what you define as the alternative media in your book, America's Right to
Well, Tom, I wouldn't go quite that far to say we've taken control of the Supreme Court and even the Congress. There's clearly a majority of Republicans in the House and in the Senate and in the White House, but
and seven out of nine of the
conservatives
and seven out of the nine of the nominees on the Supreme Court have been nominated by Republican presidents.
Oh, absolutely, but they're a Republican majority, not a conservative majority.
Okay, let's get into those definitions then, because I think that's a good one. You talk about, you know, George Meany. It wasn't Meany who was talking about hobnail boots, was it?
Oh, yeah. He talked about something like stench of Nazism. Oh, it was outrageous.
Okay. Well, here we had the situation where in 1935 the Wagner Act was passed, which basically made it, you know, possible for unions to happen in a big way in the United States. We got up to 1947. We had the peak of unionization in the United States. 35% of the American workforce was unionized, and for every union job, there was another one that had roughly the same benefits. So roughly 70% of the Americans were solidly in the middle class in 1947. Over the veto of Harry Truman, the Taft-Hartley Act gets passed, which enables states to basically opt out of the Wagner Act and say, you know, nah, we don't want to have, you know, the right to work laws. And now we've seen this steady erosion of the union movement, and at the same time, this steady erosion of the middle class. When Ronald Reagan came into office, 25% of Americans were unionized. Now it's down to 8.2% of the non-governmental workforce, and the middle class is eroding. Don't you think George Meany had reason to worry about conservatives taking over?
There's a difference there, Tom. You can worry about the erosion. You can worry about people who have a different point of view than you do. But to vilify them and think and talk in terms of they are Nazis and anti-Semites, this what we're hearing in today's election campaign is child's play compared to what was said about conservatives.
I'll give you that, Richard, but let's talk about conservative versus liberal for just a minute. Don't you think that the middle class of America really, when you get right down to it, when you look at the issues of creating a middle class, that a middle class doesn't just come out of nowhere, and it doesn't come out of the result of a totally free marketplace. The middle class comes out of the result of some level of either, on the one hand, government intervention, or two, balance, some power of labor balancing the power of organized capital. And the conservative movement doesn't recognize that. The liberal movement, many argue, is way too far, you know, over on the other side. But, you know, isn't this a legitimate debate? I mean, isn't this a real issue in your mind?
Well, it certainly is a legitimate debate. I think it's clear that Americans, as a general rule, without taking consideration all the new inventions and technology, they wouldn't want a living standard comparable today to 1947. I think everybody feels that you know, we have a higher standard of living today than we did in 1947 when a third of America was unionized. And because one of the reasons we've had the explosion of growth and economic advances in this country has been the weakening of the power of unions. Look at what the unions have done.
But Richard, hang on just a second. Richard,
our school system.
Richard, we have more bankruptcies, more personal bankruptcies right now than we had in 1947. We have fewer people in the middle class than we had in 1947.
Yeah.
We have fewer people who can be supported by a single wage earner than we did in 1947. We have fewer people who have pensions for retirement in their old age than we had in 1947. How can you say that 1947 was a bad year?
Well, just ask the average person if they would index everything they had in 47, including their assets and their salaries, to today's income. Would they want the 1947 world or today's world? I think it wouldn't be a close call. A lot of what you're talking about there is caused by government. You say we have to have two wage earners in the average family. One, it's because people have higher goals now. They want lots of vacations, and they want lots of TV sets, and you know, a lot of.
So it's that we've gotten greedy.
And the government,
Richard,
takes a lot more in their taxes.
Well, actually, in 1947, the top marginal tax rate was 90%. Now it's
Paid 30. By the middle class.
Yeah. Well, okay. We're talking with Richard Viguerie, the author of America's Right Turn. www.rightturn.us. Richard, stick around. We got to take a break here. 1-866-889-8942. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for The Facts. on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-888-9894. Our telephone number, we're talking with Richard Viguerie, the author of America's Right Turn, How Conservatives Use New and Alternative Media to Take Power. Richard, let's take a quick phone call here. We have Rick listening on WTKG, our Clear Channel affiliate in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good day, Tom, and thank you for inviting Mr. Viguerie to the program. Mr. Viguerie, how are you?
I'm fine, Rick. Good to talk to you.
You know, I voted for Ronald Reagan twice. I thought he was a decent man. I've never really regretted that vote. I think that President Eisenhower was the greatest president of my lifetime. But I think what's happened here, and, you know, I don't expect you to necessarily agree with this, I think what's happened here is Mr. Meany's concern has somewhat been borne out. You know, we no longer have Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller, Jacob Javits, Charles Percy, those kind of folks, or, frankly, even Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan. We have Dick Cheney, we have John Ashcroft, we have Tom DeLay, Bob Barr, and we have these pundits like Limbaugh and Hannity, and then we have these blonde pundits like Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter. They're all mean-spirited. Now, I don't see you that way, and I do see people like Chuck Hagel, John McCain, and Jack Kemp. Those are all decent people, but I think there's a lot of right-wing nuts out there, and I'm not going to say that there aren't left-wing nuts as well, but I think it would behoove people on your side of the fence to condemn some of these more extremist nutcases.
Well, we'll do that maybe, or consider doing that, Rick, right after you condemn all of the people who called me an anti-Semite, a neo-Nazi back in the 60s, the 70s. When they had a monopoly on the news, it was mild compared to what we were called back in those days. When there was only one source of news and a handful of gatekeepers, Walter Cronkite types, New York Times, etc., these people had no rein on them, and they just felt free to vilify and try to destroy their opponents. And now what you're saying is all these people have access to the public arena because the marketplace supports them. Ann Coulter, Tom DeLay, Dick Cheney, America supports them. I mean, maybe 50% plus of America is a nutcase, but that's America. America has put those people in positions of influence and power.
No, the people of Sugar Land, Texas, put Tom DeLay in power, and as far as Ann Coulter is concerned, she preaches to the choir. She may get a few liberals like me to pay attention to her because she wears short skirts, but I think her politics are abominable.
Well, what would you say about Michael Moore? I mean, his politics are an abomination to the vast majority of American people.
But listen, I can condemn my side of the fence. I wish you would condemn your side.
No.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable, Rick, with conservatives expressing an opinion that liberals may feel uncomfortable. Let me just say this, that I relate it to the old segregationist who used to talk about blacks and say, well, you know, I like blacks. Some of them are my best friends, while old Uncle Tom down the street is like a member of our family. But it's these new young radicals that make me nervous, people like Andy Young, Martin Luther King, i.e. the people who are going to change this little system that we have here and put me in my place, and they're going to make the minorities have their rightful place at the table.
What's your point, Richard?
But let me just say, my point is this, that liberals like Rick say, okay, I like liberals, excuse me, Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller, who are not a threat to defeating the Democrats, but these new people like Tom DeLay and Newt Gingrich, now they scare me because they are going
Richard Ann Coulter said that Democrats are traitors. You're still upset about 40 years ago George Meany talking about hobnail boots with reference to you.
Oh yeah, if you'd been called a neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic.
Well, that's what Ann Coulter is calling Democrats, right? Not just liberals. Democrats.
Ann Coulter, you know, have Ann on the show and let her, defend herself. On the show to talk about new and alternative media.
Let's get back to that right after this break. I would like to get back to that because I think that you've got a good point here about Dan Rather and CBS, and why not have truly independent media asking these questions? Why have any of the old guard in? Interesting question. 29 minutes past the hour. We're talking to Richard Viguerie, RightTurn.us. His website, his book, America's Right Turn. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions. Restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Richard Viguerie, the author of America's Right Turn, How Conservatives Use New and Alternative Media to Take Power. Also, in my opinion, the fundraising, the direct mail maven pioneer who helped bring Ronald Reagan to power way back when. Richard, in your materials, you talk about the sins of Dan Rather, for which he has now confessed and at least partially engaged in an act of contrition, putting out documents that had not been appropriately vetted. Although, as far as I know, the essence of his story, that being that strings were pulled to get George W. into the Guard, which he is continuing to deny, have not been challenged. And that he didn't show up for his flight physical haven't been challenged. But in any case, you got Bush, Rather caught in a lie. Here we've got Judy Woodruff caught in a lie. Here's misquoting John Kerry. I've got all these quotes for you if you want. We got Fox's Tony Snow caught in a lie. Several of them, as a matter of fact. We got both Ollie North and Hannity caught in lies. I can read them. Stop me at any point. I'd be glad to read them to you. Fox News host John Gibson repeatedly lying on the air. In fact, I've got 8 of his lies. Bill O'Reilly lying on the air. Fox News Channel, Carl Cameron lying on the air on September 20th. And on it goes. Why have any of these guys? I mean, you've got Fox, which is owned by billionaire Murdoch. You've got NBC, which is now owned by GE, one of the largest defense contractors in the world. You got ABC, owned by Viacom, which isn't even really an American company. You've got CBS. Why have any of these guys moderate the debate? Why don't we have truly independent media? Why not? Why not instead of millionaires with blow dried hairs whose careers depend on sucking up to power? That is what we call reporters today in the mainstream media. Why not, instead of these guys, have bloggers, have local radio personalities, have local writers for local newspapers and things like that be interviewing people on these debates?
I don't have a problem with that. You talked about all the lies, misstatements. I can't speak to those. I don't know what they are, and that's not the purpose of our conversation today. But my point is, Tom, that the times, as Bob Dylan would say, they are changing. And when I got involved in the late 50s, early 60s with national politics, there were gatekeepers, just a handful of people who determined what was the news and information people were going to have access to today. The old days, Walter Cronkite would come down to the CBS office, put down his coffee cup, and pick up his New York Times. An hour later, he had decided what was the news that America was going to hear that was he thought was important that day. Well, that time is gone forever now, and now we have literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, of news sources available to the average American.
Richard, I absolutely agree with you, and it's a marvelous thing. I mean, I remember being after having worked on the Goldwater campaign and being in the Young Republicans for Freedom and all that kind of stuff in the early 60s, in the late 60s being in the anti-war movement, and us sitting around having the exact same complaint. We can't get on the press. The local press won't cover us. There are these gatekeepers. As you say, those days are gone. So now we've got both on the left and the right, we've got a far more open media. And where we go from here? I mean, are you saying that therefore now the right? I don't get the therefore.
I'm not sure what you mean by the therefore, but let me just say, if the old left, the socialist of the anti-war movement, of course we're all anti-war.
Well, socialism
I would
is economic.
The surrender crowd, but be that as it may, the difference between them and us was that we adopted the motto of the Catholic charity, the Christophers, which is "Don't curse the darkness, light a candle." So we didn't have access to the media, so fine. We went out there and developed our own media. And so through direct mail, through talk radio, cable television, the Internet, we just said we won't worry about Viacom.
No, you guys did a great job. I mean, all those millions from Joe Coors and Richard Mellon Scaife. I mean, look at the funding to the Heritage Foundation and on and on. I am in awe of it. I'm absolutely in awe of it. And you have succeeded in shifting America hard to the right. And look what it's brought us. It's brought us a war. It's brought us a quagmire. It's brought us the destruction of the American middle class. It's brought us the surrender of American sovereignty under the Clinton administration, Clinton having fallen into the sway of conservative economics to transnational corporations. I mean, how can you view any of that as good?
Well, of course, that's your description of it. I think most Americans will go to the polls on November 2nd and say that, you know, they like the direction of the country.
Most Americans are earning less.
They don't want old-line socialism. America has never been a socialist country, Tom, and it won't be a socialist country tomorrow either.
So, Richard, you think we should do away with our socialist police departments?
Our what?
Our socialist police departments.
Oh, come on, Tom. You're making scarecrows and knocking them down.
There was a time, Richard, in the United States where
wealth is just not going to sell in America.
Richard, there was a time in the United States where you would have four or five, six separate private fire departments serving a community. For example, the city of Chicago had seven of them. And you would pay every month to a fire department that you chose, and they would give you a medallion to put in front of your house. If your house caught on fire, you had to figure out some way to get in touch with them. If another fire department drove by and you had the wrong medallion on your house, they just kept on going, your house burned down. So we all got together and we said, you know, we'd like to have a socialist fire department. What's wrong with that?
Tom, you're just, again, making scarecrows and knocking them down. I mean, you're at the silly.
No, Richard, I'm really not. I mean, there's a legitimate point here, which is when we collectively agree that we want to have something.
How can you take anything you say serious when you make those type of stupid arguments? Nobody wants to go back to that type of a system, but we don't think we should take from the producers and give everything to the non-producers. That's not America. America, in fact, the world came out of the caves and began to stand up and have enough to eat and live a decent life when we reduced the power of government. Throughout recorded history, it was government that stifled mankind and was brutal to men, whether it was kings or queens or warlords.
I absolutely agree with you, Richard, and I have written three books on that topic. And those governments were not those 7,000 years of tyrannies by warlord kings, by theocrats, and rule by the rich known as feudalism were not governments of, by, and for we the people. And when people in a constitutionally limited democratic republic like the United States say that they are opposed to government, they are saying that you guys are saying you are opposed to us, to we the people.
Well, Tom, let me say that, quite frankly, I don't mean to be rude or
feel free,
but you're flying under false colors. You said I want to speak to you today about your book, America's Right Turn, and you take the opportunity to go off on your own tirade, having nothing to do with the book. You want 50 minutes of my time, and I appreciate that, and you want to go fight wars of 40 or 50 years ago, but I think we should at least let the author know that you're going to come in. You're not going to talk about his book.
Respectfully, Richard, you were the one who started this conversation with 40 or 50 years ago. And
I'm sorry, you have to refresh my memory. I get us off track?
You started out by talking about being called a jackbooted thug and an anti-Semite 40 years ago.
You made that up out of the air? Oh, you didn't attack the conservatives?
Oh, I'm sure. And no problem. Let's take some phone calls here, Richard. Tom in Trinidad, California on the line. Tom, welcome to the program. 1-866-889-8894,
our number. Thanks for letting me on.
Sure.
I wondered if you saw what happened in Austin, Texas yesterday with Tom DeLay's fundraising group.
No.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard of the Americans for a Republican Majority?
Yeah.
It's headed by Gene
Dulles. I've read the news stories as you have.
Okay, well, he's been indicted for money laundering, it looks like.
Who's been indicted?
His name is James Ellis. He heads the Americans for a Republican Majority, which is Tom DeLay's national fundraising committee that helped establish Texans for a Republican Majority.
Uh-huh.
There's eight companies that were also accused of illegal corporate contributions.
And your point is what?
Well, my point is that's the new Republican Party that I see. You know, they went in there and they basically illegally took money and then illegally took over the state and then
We have an innocent until proven guilty system here in America.
There you go. Tom, thanks for the call. You know, Richard, this raises a larger question. Isn't there a battle underway right now for the heart and soul of the Republican Party between the old line Republicans like Lincoln Chafee and Olympia Snowe, who hearken back to the Rockefeller, and I would even say to Everett Dirksen, who I always considered a noble man, and the people who, like Tom DeLay, who really seem to be more power at any cost, a little more Machiavellian?
Well, yes and no, Tom. I think that the really battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party will start the morning of November 3rd. I think all conservatives and Republicans are pretty much on board supporting the president and his team. But you're right. Come November 3rd, it won't be with the Lincoln Chafees and the Olympia Snows of the world because nobody takes them really serious in
terms of
the National Republican Party.
Yeah.
But there are others, whether it's Giuliani or Pataki, you know, that the old Rockefeller wing of the party. And, yeah, we will be doing battle with them. And I would put our money on the conservatives because, you know, we're serious. We meet lots. We work hard. And we get up early in the morning and work through the day.
And you guys have the money.
70, I still work a 14-hour day. And we're committed to bringing the conservatives to power in this country. And the moderate liberals don't seem to have that type of dedication.
Yeah, nor do they have the cash.
Well, you know, we didn't just go out on the street and hold out a hat and people put money in it. We worked. We went out there and developed a plan and got people to invest in our plan. And the liberals can do the same thing if they would just, you know, show some initiative and have some ideas that people want to fund. Probably people don't want to fund their ideas of redistributing America's wealth.
Right. Probably not. In fact, you know, right along those lines, I mean, many would say that you guys are really just working in the interest of the wealthy. How do you respond to that?
We're working in the interests of America. I don't understand this idea of attacking, you know, corporations that are supplying much of the wealth of this country. It's like saying, I love milk, but I hate cows. I love eggs, and I hate chickens. You know, you love jobs and a nice income, but you hate corporations who produce the thing. Who do you think employs you? Your next-door neighbor, you know, or, you know, Jack Welch?
But if you get crushed in a cattle stampede, you might have a little different opinion of cows. I mean, the corporations, and I, speaking as somebody who has run a number of corporations, several of them multi-million-dollar corporations, I can say, you know, the corporate form is a marvelous thing, and it's a wonderful thing to earn money and to employ people, and you and I have both done that in our lives. And yet, shouldn't there be appropriate restraints on corporate behavior in the United States?
Well, there is restraints. My gosh, there is too much in the way of restraints, and that's one of the issues that this election is being fought out over, that maybe there's too much government. It's like Reagan said, remember, government is the problem. It governs too much. It taxes too much.
Then how is it, Richard? How is it? I got another caller here I want to get to, too, but how is it, Richard, then, that as we've seen more and more Republican rule since the rise of Reagan, we've seen the steady decline of the middle class? How do you account for that?
Well, I don't accept your premise that we've seen the decline of the middle class. I think America feels that the country's going in the right direction, and they feel very good about things, other than our battle with the radical Muslims. Other than that, America would be in pretty good shape.
I see. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Scott in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the lively debate. I wanted to sort of maybe start with the good news, which I think we are on the, you know, in the radical middle to left, starting to organize in that same grassroots kind of internet-based way with all of the alternative news sources online. And then, you know, if you look at the growth of an alternative talk radio a network like Air America, where every market that it gets into, it's doing quite well. And I was just hearing yesterday about Democracy Now!, which is certainly left of the corporate media, where, you know, they're basically up to almost 300 stations are carrying that program. And just recently in Denver, the community radio station in Boulder was able to purchase And this is like the power of the marketplace, I guess, with lots of small donations. But, you know,
they bought a radio station, right? Your point, Scott.
Well, my point is that I think there's a lot. I mean, it's easy to throw eggs at these guys. I mean, I certainly don't. You know, I'm not looking at maybe taking on a second job, and I'm self-employed. I'm not, and I don't have any benefits. I'm a diabetic with no health care because I can't qualify for health care because I'm a diabetic. Because of that wonderful marketplace that Richard's so fond of without any government oversight.
But what's your point, Scott?
My point is that the one thing I wanted to really call him on among so many was that when he said the reason that Americans now have two income earners is that we want more TVs. That is the biggest load of crap I have ever heard. Everybody I talked to who's working 18-hour days is working those days, Richard, because they want some food on their damn table and they want some medicine in their damn medicine cabinets.
Okay, Scott, I got the point. Richard, I think Scott makes a good point. I think you disagree with it, Richard. Let's get back to your book, because we've only got a couple minutes here.
Tom, let me just say, sure. In regard to the callers talking about all the media, that the liberals are, you know, making advances here and there, and that's great. My book, by the way, is not for only conservatives. Yes, I'm a partisan, and because of my background is conservative, I talk about my conservative experiences. But this is a book that would be very interesting to liberals and moderates and conservatives, because it just shows how one particular ideology advanced their cause through the new and alternative media. But the liberals could do the same, and the caller talked about their beginning to do these.
Well, things. And that was my before when I said, and what's the therefore there? I guess the therefore is any. Of your book, America's Right Turn, How Conservatives Use New and Alternative Media to Take Power, is that this is a knife that cuts both ways, and that the conservatives got there first. You guys have been using it very effectively. I salute you for that, and now we're seeing the rise of it on the left as well. Time will tell how it all shakes out. Richard Viguerie, thank you so much for being with us today.
A pleasure.
I do appreciate it. His website, by the way, rightturn.us.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Thurston, where did you suddenly get that walkie-talkie?
I've had it all along, my dove. You see, the statute of limitations on my creative accounting is up. Time to end this tropical charade and return to our billions.
Oh, do we have to go back? It's so cozy here on the island.
My dear, don't you listen to the coconut radio? It's the best time ever to be a billionaire in America. More than half of the last tax cut went to the wealthiest 5%.
But the voters will never allow that kind of thing.
That's what's so marvelous, lovey. The middle class believes they're going to be billionaires someday.
Well, anything's possible in America.
Oh, your naivete is so charming. My love. The fact is, the gap between them and us is getting wider all the time. W's our boy.
Bush Economics. More than just a 3-hour tour. Paid for by BillionairesTheBush.com.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to...
This is a Wynn feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. The PBGC was created in 1974 to ensure protected or defined benefit plans, which are a dying breed because workers receive a guaranteed amount of money regardless of their company's investment performance. Most workers are now offered 401k plans, which are not insured and based on the whims of the stock market. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
U.S. Airways announced on Sunday it was returning to bankruptcy for the second time after having already terminated the pilot's pension plan. And now it's revealed intentions to terminate the pensions for all of its other labor union employees.
There's a limit on how much is guaranteed. One of the limitations is that no more than, I think, $44,000 a year of pension will be guaranteed. And there are people in these unions that will earn pensions greater than that. The amount in excess of that limit, they will not receive.
In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
There needs to be a different balance, either less risk being taken on or more premiums to offset that risk. And it was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were. And stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks. And it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments. And if they can't pay out, the burden falls on the PBGC and ultimately the U.S. taxpayer. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The truth is coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Aren't conservatives wonderful? Losing the argument, change the subject. Yeah, it always works. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Steve in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Steve, what's up? Steve? Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I pushed the wrong button. This must be Ivan in Northampton, Mass.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Hey, Ivan, what's up?
Well, I'm surprised you didn't jump on Vigory when he said, take from the producers, that we, the consumers, are taking from the producers.
I know. There wasn't time to get into that whole... There were at least a half a dozen times that he was throwing out talking points that had we had a little more time, I would have loved to have deconstructed.
The thing is that's really an important point because all of a sudden there was a certain point during the late 60s, early 70s that the American people became consumers. And if you look that up in the dictionary, it's not a really good definition. It's to use up, to consume.
Well, not only that, workers are the producers.
They are.
Things get produced because people do things. The producers are the workers. The people who own the factories are the capitalists. That is, they invest capital, they get capital back. And yes, those factories, that business produces something, but the production is done by we the people. Good point. Good point, Ivan. Thank you for sensitizing me to that. In the future, I will not let that slide by.
Okay, great.
Okay, Steve and Cincinnati. Cincinnati, Ohio on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Not much. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just want to say that over the course of my adult life, through the course of Ronald Reagan and Bush Sr., I mean, we've seen a deregulation of everything. I mean, we've deregulated power, you name it, trucking. First thing Ronald Reagan did when he got in office was fire all the air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
Time and time again, the only balance we've seen to have over the last 10, 15, 20 years was the fact that we never had Republican Senate, Republican Congress, and Republican President.
No, we have single-party rule now, and these guys want to solidify it. I'm telling you, the agenda of the, I don't want to say the Republican Party, because I still have some respect for the party itself, but the agenda of the cons who have taken it over is single-party rule. It's the same agenda that the Politburo had. It's a Stalinist agenda.
Well, and now that the thing that bothers me, I think, more than anything is the media. I mean, you can't get a fair shake.
Yeah, well, and now you've got, you know, as Richard Vigory just correctly pointed out, you got the rise of the right-wing media, you got the blogosphere, you got, you know, billionaire Rupert Murdoch's Fox News channel, you know, Roger Ailes, the con voice of the Republicans, and on it goes. And all of these media are owned by huge multi-billion dollar companies. It's interesting times we live in, Steve. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Spertinsky, co-chief negotiator for the SSA national contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Spertinsky said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Svirginsky added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Svirginsky said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.com.
Poor Richard. Richard Perle is a right-wing neocon theorist who wants to be taken seriously as both a governmental and corporate insider. But he keeps taking highly public pratfalls that would be absolutely comical if they weren't so ugly. Perle, who's tight with Dick Cheney and Donnie Rumsfeld, was one of the main architects of George W.'s disastrous policies in Iraq. He was the chief proponent of the fanciful notion that our invading troops would be greeted by grateful people tossing rose petals at them. Instead, angry Iraqis are tossing bombs, and more than 1,000 of our troops are dead. Richard is not doing any better in the corporate world. His latest pratfall is as a board member of Hollinger International, a media conglomerate that owns such papers as the Chicago Sun-Times and Jerusalem Post. The head honcho of Hollinger, Lord Conrad Black, now stands accused of having looted some $400 million from the corporation. Perle was not merely on the board, but on the executive committee, with a direct fiduciary responsibility to protect the interests of the shareholders. But this supposed watchdog was Lord Black's lapdog. Perle admits that he personally rubber-stamped stacks of financial documents involving Black's looting, signing the papers without even reading them. One reason that Perle was so head-in-the-sand irresponsible is that he was enjoying the corporate gravy, too. In a sweetheart deal, he directed a Hollinger division that let him pocket $3 million, even though this division lost $49 million on Perle's watch. But Richard now claims that he's a victim. After Lord Black's corporate kleptocracy was exposed, and after an internal report nailed Perle for his flagrant abdication of duty, Richard loudly proclaimed to the media that he had been duped by his former friend and benefactor. This is Jim Hightower saying, poor Richard, I guess he was duped into putting those millions into his own pockets, too.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. President George W. Bush. Looking for some answers. Where do I find a smart guy? Things aren't going so well in Iraq. The world doesn't seem to be buying all the happy talk. Even the Republicans aren't buying the happy talk. Happy talk isn't going to get you through the election. So George W. goes off on a search, reported by Andy Borowitz today, borowitzreport.com. Bush seeks answers on Iraq from Jeopardy champion. President George W. Bush has sought answers on Iraq from Ken Jennings, the champion of the popular game show Jeopardy, White House aides confirmed today. Mr. Bush first came to believe that Mr. Jennings might have the answers on Iraq when he saw the game show whiz on television earlier this summer, telling aides, "That there is the smartest man in the world." After contacting Mr. Jennings, White House aides began constructing a mock-up of the Jeopardy set in the basement of the White House, and enlisted Jeopardy host Alex Trebek to reprise his usual role. Instead of the usual potpourri of Jeopardy questions, however, the special White House edition had only categories that pertained to the crisis in Iraq, such as angry Shiites, ruptured oil pipelines, and massive power outages. According to those who saw Mr. Jennings play the special Iraqi version, the champ breezed through most of the questions but was stumped when he got to exit strategies for $100. Mr. Trebek read, "The most likely outcome of the war in Iraq, this should happen by the end of 2005. Mr. Jennings guessed, "What is civil war and total chaos?" "No, I'm sorry," Mr. Trebek replied. "The correct question is, what is a thriving Middle Eastern democracy and a beacon of hope for the entire region?" Mr. Bush, disappointed by Mr. Jennings' performance, reportedly told aides, "Ken Jennings may be the smartest man in the world, but when it comes to Iraq, he's dumb as a post." Thank you, Andy Borowitz, for enlightening us about that. By the way, did you notice, those of you who heard George W.'s speech before the United Nations yesterday, he didn't have a Texas accent. Did you notice that? I'm sitting there listening to this thing, and he's talking along, and you hear him when he's out on the stump, and it's like this, and it's like that. That's not even a Texas accent. You know, I lived in Georgia for 16, 17 years, and I can't even quite do a Georgia accent, but we know my Texas accent is highly imperfect. But anyhow, you get the point. Heavily accented. It's just us down here, just us down home folks. You know, it's that's the way that George W. does it on the stump, particularly when he's out west or in the south. But before the United Nations, he was speaking perfect Midwestern English, by and large. I thought that was interesting. He was speaking, well, of course, I mean, what do you expect? This guy didn't grow up in Texas. He went to Andover for his school years, his you know, pre-college years, where he was a cheerleader, Andover Prep Academy. That's in Massachusetts. Then he went to Yale University, which is in the great Northeast, as they say. It's not part of Texas. And then he went to back to the Texas Air National Guard for a brief period of time. And then over to Alabama, at least for a dental exam. And then back to Harvard. Well, I guess he went to Yale first. Yeah, he went to Yale first, and then he went to Harvard. That's not in Texas. So, you know, he didn't really grow up in Texas, but he got good at the Texas accent when he needs it. But clearly not how he spoke. By the way, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you would like to opine on the issues of the day, drop by our chat room. Is TomHartman.com, pretty much however you spell it. I mean, the correct spelling is T-H-O-M Hartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N, with two N's at the end, .com. But we also bought all the misspellings, so I think there's four possible. So anyhow, however you spell it, you should get in there. And click live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, where you can drop into the chat room. A businessman, this is Arthur Blaustein. He's the former chairman of the President's National Council on Economic Opportunity under Jimmy Carter. Wrote a piece for the Los Angeles Times that is worthy of quoting in some small part. He talks about how here's his quote. He says, "A businessman who voted for President Bush 4 years ago and Bill Clinton in 1996 told me that John F. Kerry's social program goals, quote, seem good, but I'm worried the Democrats can't manage the economy as well as the Republicans, and they'll get into my wallet, end quote. This is one of the great myths that multimillionaire Limbaugh and his multimillionaire talk show buddies have promulgated, is that somehow the economy is better for people other than multimillionaires under Republicans and not so good under Democrats, when in fact it's the other way around. The economy is well, here, let's just look at the details. Since World War II, right? In the period of time most people alive today can remember. Many people alive today can remember. Since World War II, we have had 11 presidents. 5 Democrats and 6 Republicans. The Republicans are Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Bush number 1, Ronald Reagan, Bush number 2, right? And you've had 5 Democrats. Harry Truman, John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, and Bill Clinton. Which president, out of all 11 of these, the 6 Republicans and the 5 Democrats over the last 50 years, actually it would be longer than that, almost 60 years, the last 60 years, under 11 presidents, which president produced the highest growth in the gross domestic product? What do you think? Well, it was Harry Truman, the Democrat. Who had the highest growth in jobs? It was Bill, most of you remember, it was Bill Clinton, the Democrat. Who had the greatest increase in personal disposable income after taxes? It was the Democrat Lyndon Baines Johnson. Who had the highest growth in industrial production? Another industry, really cranking up and spitting stuff out and doing well. It was John Kennedy, the Democrat. Who had the highest growth in hourly wages? It was the Democrat, Lyndon Johnson. Who had the lowest misery index? That's inflation plus unemployment. Lowest misery. It was Harry Truman. This is the years that Richard Viguerie says he doesn't want to take us back to, you'll recall. Who had the lowest rate of inflation? Harry Truman. Who had the largest reduction in a deficit in 60 years? Bill Clinton. These were all Democrats. Well, then you say, well, what about business? You know, what about my stock portfolio? For those of you who are fortunate enough to have one, well, it turns out the Dow Jones Industrial Average during the 20th century, that is the whole 100 years, rose an average of 7.3% per year under Republican presidents. Under Democrats, it jumped 10.3%. So it turns out that even the wealthy do well under Democrats. Everybody does well under Democrats, it seems. The national debt increased by an average of 3.7% under Democratic administrations. How much do you think the national debt on average increased during the last 60 years when Republicans occupied the White House? Democrats, 3.7%. Republicans, 9.1%. Average unemployment rate during Democratic administrations, 4.8%. For Republicans over the last 60 years, 6.3%. Don't ever, ever, ever let anybody tell you that the Republican Party is good for business, good for the economy, good for American workers, or good for America in general economically. It simply ain't true. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kate in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Kate, what's up?
Hi, Tom. The gentleman who was your guest was talking about being free from government.
Yeah.
And listening to you as long as I have now, I've begun to understand a really fine subtlety I think should be really, we should just get into our brains, which is that our ancestors didn't fight and die to be free from government. They fought and died to be free to self-govern. And
right.
they fought and died to be free from that government which was oppressing them.
Right,
and
from tyranny.
The guest was equating government with previous governments, that they fought to overthrow that kind of government.
I agree. I thought I had made that point to him. And the other point that I didn't get to make, and it was on my mind, and you know, he just started talking
yeah.
and it slid by, is that when you push government out of the way, Even a dictatorial government, I mean, even kingdoms, I mean, this is the lesson of the Magna Carta. In fact, this is what the Magna Carta in 1215, the King John signed, was all about. Mm-hmm. When you push government out of the way, you create a vacuum that will be filled by something. And that something will either be a church, a theocracy, or it will be rule by the rich, also known as feudalism, or it will be warlords. But when you push government out of the way, it will be that vacuum, that power vacuum will be filled by something. And what the cons are saying is they do not want the government of the United States, the original democratic, constitutionally limited republic, a government of, by, and for we the people. As Grover Norquist said, they just want to shrink that down to the size so they can drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Well, then what the hell do they want to replace it with? I can tell you what it is. They want to replace it with feudalism, reinvented in the 20th century by Mussolini under the name fascism,
right.
which is
rule
by the corporate
as
rich.
As he called it, the producers.
Yes.
I also think that we throw around the word, or the well, all of us, really. I mean, I remember being opposed to government when I was a student during the 60s. And we also throw around the word free. I want to be free. But we don't put in, I want to be free to self-government, to self-govern,
right.
which is really what the core of our system is about, that we need to understand and fight to preserve.
Yeah.
So that's my rant.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank
well,
you, Tom.
It's a good one, Kate. Thanks. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. And well said. And in fact, you know, yes, there government can be oppressive. I mean, you know, George Washington pointed this out. Government can be a fire that burns. And by the way, last week on the program, I made some comments about the TSA. I said, you know, you give people the guns and it goes to their head. I got an email from somebody in Grand Rapids who says he works for the TSA. And he says, we don't have guns. We can't arrest you. So I sent him back an email saying, great, you know, I'd like some more information. And if you're listening right now, you, the guy for the TSA, your email bounced back at me as a dead address. But I'd love to have some more information about that. I, you know, as I said, most of the people in TSA that I have encountered in airports around the United States have been very, very decent people. Hats off to them. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Orrick cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research.
That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, our program brought to you today by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research. That's www.cascar.org. I noticed the ORG got cut off in their spot there. I wanted to be sure you knew about that. By the organic wine company, Eco Wine, give them a call. You can actually talk with Veronique on the telephone, which is a very pleasant experience, I got to tell you. 1-888-ECO-WINE, ECOWINE, 1-888-ECO-WINE. And by Small Dog Electronics. For all things Macintosh, Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-511, MAX, M-A-C-S, 511-MAX. And be sure and tell them all that you heard about it on the Tom Hartman radio program. Several folks in our chat room, and we've actually had three callers in the last 5 minutes, asking the exact same question, which, where did you get those statistics from that you just read about Republicans versus Democrats? It was an article, it was an op-ed piece that was published in the Los Angeles Times on September 19th. Today's the 22nd, the 19th must have been last Saturday. Written by Arthur I. Blaustein, B-L-A-U-S-T-E-I-N, who is the former chairman of President Jimmy Carter's National Advisory Council on Economic Opportunity. And the title of the article, the September 19th article by Arthur Blaustein, was "Who's Better in the Driver's Seat? Under Democratic Presidents, the Engine Hums Along." And so you should be able to easily find it on the LATimes.com website. And if they only hold their archives for a week or so, I can't imagine that this thing hasn't been republished all over the Internet, all over the place. So the words to search on would be Blaustein, B-L-A-U-S-T-E-I-N. And I don't know what else. What's a good odd word? If you put the phrase "generally accepted measures" in quotes into Google, I'll bet you'd find it almost 100% of the time. That's a rather non-normal phrase that's in this article, but very straightforward stuff. And I'm going to hang on to that. We'll come back to that in the future. Just as a heads up, I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon, Tomorrow and Friday we'll be broadcasting, in fact, live from the studios at KBOO, the community radio station there. This show is not carried on that station because it's a nonprofit station, but I will be for an hour and a half on Friday morning be on the air on KBOO doing a fundraiser for them. And then they're kind enough to let us use one of their studios to broadcast this show from during the hours of 9 to noon Pacific time. And on Thursday, tomorrow night, I'll be giving a talk at Borders Books at 7 p.m. We'll be at Lewis and Clark at 3. Let's see, KBOO at 7:30. And then the Unitarian Church, 11:30 to 1:30 in the afternoon on Friday. And then that's just a special lunch. And then the big presentation Friday night will be at the Unitarian Church, 7 to 9 p.m. If you are in the Portland area or can get there, Portland, Oregon, the number to call for reservations, information, whatever, all of these things are free, by the way. Area code 503-665-3957. Ask for Marcia. Area 503-665-3957. Just as a heads up, I know that we do have listeners in the Portland area, and in fact, I hear from them fairly regularly. So, look forward to seeing you there. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's take a quick call here, Dave in Humboldt County. Hang on just a second, wrong button here. Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
You are one very productive, busy man, Tom, and moving around a lot. On that Blaustein's thing there. Under what administrations could you tell the very, very rich were able to distance themselves the most from the poor?
Well, clearly, you know, he doesn't list that, but clearly I would say Reagan and George W. Were at the top of the heap.
Yeah, I would say that, too. I just was wondering if that was something that he had included.
No, he hadn't. This was all positive stuff. There was no picking on conservatives in this article. One of the things I liked about it was just a totally upbeat. Here, if you want the most positive outcome, this is what you do. You go with the Democratic Party. And again, I say that, and not as a Democrat. I got a lot of problems with the Democratic Party. But this year, on November 2nd, I will be voting for John Kerry. 29 minutes past the hour. Thanks, Dave.
Yes.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
With the election looming, George W. is back to claiming that he's a compassionate conservative. And as evidence, he cites his centerpiece education law, the No Child Left Behind Act. This is supposed to be a tough love reform, compelling all public school kids to pass standardized tests. If the kids fail the federal government's strict tests, they'll be held back, and their schools can lose federal funding and be replaced by corporate-run chain schools. But instead of tough love, Bush's law actually is a tough luck scam, for he has callously refused to fund the reform part. To get Congress to approve the law, he had agreed to put up tax dollars for smaller classes, special teachers, tutors, educational equipment, and other resources needed for schools to improve the ability of our kids to learn and pass Bush's tests. He reneged. In this year's presidential budget proposal, George shorts his own No Child Left Behind reform by $9 billion. That's on top of $17 billion he withheld in his previous two budgets. In fact, this spring, Bush offered more of our tax dollars in the form of a bribe to try to get the government of Turkey to send some troops to Iraq than he has offered to all of America's school districts to implement his federally mandated education law. By so severely shortchanging our public schools, the Bushites can advance their ideological agenda of school privatization. As more and more schools lack the resources to achieve the passing rates required on the mandated tests, a little-known provision in Georgia's law will kick in, one that encourages states to privatize schools that fail his testing system.
This is Jim Hightower saying, lest you assume that private schools will be better, thus more compassionate, recent data from Bush's own education department now reveals that children in such schools are doing worse academically than those who are in our public system. Georgia's reform is not about compassion, it's about profits.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you?
You're back. Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. If you have thoughts, opinions, concerns, particularly arguments, I would love to hear from you if you think I'm full of beans. If you think I'm wrong, if you think I've gone off the edge, if you can prove to me that I am the points that I'm making and the things I'm saying are wrong, I will put you on the air in a heartbeat. I know that many of the right wing shows, in fact, the vast majority of them, screen their calls and keep out anybody who disagrees. We do the opposite here. Our test is, what's your name and where are you from? And if you say, I'm calling to disagree, I will move you to the front of the line. I love to hear from people who disagree with me. Wouldn't it be nice? Unfortunately, it's funny. We had this guy on today, Richard Viguerie, who got all upset because hey, you didn't tell me that this was going to be a liberal show. Well, no, we didn't. In fact, his office called before he went on the air and says, is this guy a Democrat or Republican? And Louise says, he's an independent. There was this long silence, and they said, okay. And we had spent hours trying to find a conservative who would come on the air with me. They're afraid to do it. If you know a conservative who would like to take me on, please, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bring them on, as George W. says. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. That was a great challenge. I wish I could disagree with you, but after watching the news last night and seeing about the election, I was wondering who in the world can vote for these people. And I can't, I thought of four basic reasons that I think covers 90% of them. They're either part of the rich and greedy class or wannabe, or they're maybe grossly uninformed or a true believer fundamentalist who has suspended all critical thinking so they can be manipulated easily, or they're just plain stupid and fall for anything, whatever they see on TV, or the most dangerous, they're neocons with the PNAC view of the U.S. world utopian domination plan.
Yeah, there is this I call it a dystopia, a utopia gone wrong. This dystopian worldview that the neocons promote of the United States as the benevolent emperor of the world. And this is very seductive. I mean, it's just like the Ayn Rand, the libertarians. That's also a dystopian worldview. you know, every man for himself, absolutely unfettered free market. You read Atlas Shrugged, and it's all about how, you know, who was John Galt? Well, he's a, this noble capitalist who wanted to make it in the world, but the government bureaucrats thwarted him at every turn, and as a result, he finally said, screw this, and the country went down the tubes because the capitalists didn't want to play anymore. And, you know, that's Atlas Shrugged in a nutshell. And it has spawned this whole, literally a whole movement. I mean, the Cato Foundation is founded on that, and the Cato Institute. And it is not grounded in any historical reality whatsoever. Not even in a practical reality, not even in a possibility. So, Glenn, they're over the top.
Yep.
They're over the top. Thanks for the call, Glenn. Yep. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to Ken in Rockwood, Michigan. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good to hear you.
Thank you.
Sometimes some of the silliest things can turn an election around. Remember, where's the beef?
Yeah.
Who lost? I forgot who lost because of that.
I don't remember either. I just remember Clara.
Yeah, where's the beef? Yeah, Clara, where's the beef? Anyhow, yeah. You mentioned that George Bush being a cheerleader.
Yes.
Somebody ought to do some research and find that picture of George Bush being a cheerleader and take that macho image of him away.
Well, you know, in the film Hijacking Catastrophe, they have two different pictures of George Bush in his cheerleading outfit, holding a megaphone at Andover Prep, being, you know, this nice, clean-cut cheerleader. And one of the pictures is him doing that, and the other picture is him with these four other guys with all their, you know, every hair in place perfectly, wearing their nice V-neck T-shirts, kind of all leaning over each other in a circle. You know, it's like cheerleaders do, you know,
posing. Making out to be a pansy instead of a macho guy.
Yeah, well, I'm not willing to say that being a cheerleader is a pansy thing, but I'll bet George Bush would. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll leave it to you. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's out there, and if you get the movie Hijacking, actually probably, you know, on Google, if you go to Google and you go to the advanced searches, they have an image search. If you just go to google.com and click on images. And it'd be real interesting to type in George Bush cheerleader Andover and see. I'll bet somebody's put those pictures up on the web.
Okay, very good.
Be there. In fact, if you find them, Ken, give me a call back and let me know. Tell our folks how we can find them.
I will do that.
Okay,
thanks.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi. One thing I noticed on the Today Show this morning when the brother of the last hostage that was killed was being interviewed by Katie Couric, when he was on at the first of the week, he said his brother had to go to Iraq because he needed to find a job, and that was the best way he thought he could support his family.
Sure, they're paying off.
Today, when they were discussing why he was in Iraq, his brother said that his brother that had been killed had a difficult time finding work, and that he had been working three jobs before he took the job assignment in Iraq to support his family. And I thought, how interesting, someone who is a victim of Bush's economic policies and had to work three jobs went to Iraq because he felt that was his best option for supporting his family, and went over there and was killed, again, because of Bush's failed policies.
Yeah, and the tragedy of it is it's not just the so-called contractors who are going over to make $100,000, $150,000 a year, in Iraq because there's no job opportunities here. That's a real problem, and there's a lot of them. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of them.
Right.
But of course, their corporations are charging $250,000 a year for their time because they got to make a profit on it, and that's all paid for by you and me. That's that $200 billion that we're coughing up in George Bush's dystopian privatization scheme. There's not only that, but also, you know, there are folks who say, oh, all these soldiers, it's disproportionately, you know, from the black inner cities, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that the majority of the soldiers, when you look at the proportion of soldiers who have been killed in Iraq, the proportion of white to black and other minority groups pretty much mirrors America right across the board. And yet the army is still the employer of last resort. What this means is that 15, 20, 25 years ago, the Army was made up principally of people from the lowest socioeconomic classes and from African-American communities who are still, you know, I know there's all this talk on the part of the cons about, you know, we have a colorblind society and isn't everything fine and we got to do away with all, you know, affirmative action because we've solved the race problem. But I'm telling you, there is still racial oppression in the United States and people of color are still suffering from it. And you know, just the most recent study just a few months ago where they just had job applicants just sending in applications where they had conspicuously African-American names, didn't get the callbacks that the people with the WASPy names got the callbacks, regardless, even if they were more qualified. So anyhow, it used to be. But now what we're seeing is in the Army, and particularly in the Air National Guard, that it's middle-class Americans, of which, you know, equally white and black. In other words, this isn't a thing of race anymore. It has become a thing of income.
Right.
And the Army is the employer of last resort. And the third point that I think that you're dancing around the edge of here, David, so well, and I really appreciate you bringing this up. The idea, just the idea, which has been uncritically swallowed by the American news media and by politicians of all stripe in the United States, the idea that there is nobody in Iraq who can rebuild that country and therefore Halliburton has to go in and do it, is the most racist, culturalist, insane idea I have ever... This was one of the most advanced nations in the Middle East. This is a country that has very successfully built high-rise buildings, built telephone systems, built a military, built water systems, built water purification plants, built septic systems, built power plants, built electric, built apartment buildings, built houses. They've got contractors. They know how to make cement. They know how to build houses. They have all of that stuff there. Why? Why on God's green earth, and they're willing to work for $5 a day, and in fact that's good money for them, or $15 or $20 a day. Why is it that we are sending all these American contractors to rebuild a country which has the ability to rebuild itself for 1/100th of the cost of what we're spending, if it's not just to enrich the cronies of George W. Bush? Can you tell me?
I agree.
I can't figure any other reason. This is just absolutely insane. We are going to rebuild a country that is perfectly capable of rebuilding itself if we just got out of the damn way. So anyway, I'm raving here, Dave. I got to slow down. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
okay.
it. Good to hear from you. Okay, 17 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Let's take a call from Helen in Virginia. Hey, Helen, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I like what you're saying, and I can't believe that there's so much corruption and such damage going on through these ads for the presidency. It's outrageous. It's making me ill.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I called about, I wondered if you had seen a new ad on TV where they showed another prisoner of war in Vietnam marching down the street.
A political ad?
Yeah.
No, I'm guessing Virginia must be a swing state. We don't get those things here in Vermont. They've given up on us.
There's a political ad where they're using another POW like they used McCain, and I think it's a Bush ad. And I don't know why they're bringing back Vietnam like they're doing, because it's making the people, the families and the children and any problems that occurred between them horrendous. It's making them remember things that happened that they wanted to forget a long time ago.
Helen, they're doing it for a very simple purpose, and that is that they believe in power at all costs. They don't care what kind of damage is done.
How could anybody put a corruption into the administration like that? It's sickening.
This is the most corrupt administration perhaps in the history of the United States, if not certainly since Ulysses S. Grant, Helen.
Well, I agree with that because I've seen other presidents and I have never seen anything like that. It's making me ill.
Yeah, I'm assuming, Helen, that in school you studied about Albert Fell and the Teapot Dome scandal.
Yes.
Remember him? He was under, what was it, Coolidge? He was the Secretary of the Treasury?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not that far
yeah.
back.
I believe it was Coolidge. I could be wrong, but I remember Albert Fell, and the Teapot Dome scandal. And what he had done was he had simply leased an area, an oil-producing area out west called the Teapot Dome. It was just, you know, that was a geographic formation, a geologic formation. He had leased it to some friends of his. And that nearly brought down an administration. How times have changed. I mean, George W. is giving away the country to his buddies.
He absolutely is, and it's making me sick. And I don't know how everybody's fighting between the left and the right. I thought that the people that were put in Congress were supposed to support the people that they elected them, and it doesn't look to me like they're doing that.
No.
And the other thing I can't understand is why don't we talk about the elections and if the congressmen that we elected aren't doing what they're supposed to do, then get them out.
Yeah. Well, the reason that the people who are our elected officials, by and large, are not responding to the needs and demands of you and me. I mean, you've got national polls that show between 75% and 85% of Americans, for example, want a national health care system like Canada has or like the rest of the developed world has, which
well,
is actually cheaper than what we have right
but
now.
But that's what I always say. I've talked to some English friends I have, and they say their health system universal is wonderful.
Yeah.
And they don't complain about the price that somebody else has to pay. But the thing is, it seems like the United States is getting so corrupt. It's just sickening.
Well, and you've put your finger directly on the problem, Helen. The problem is the fact that money, the Supreme Court, a conservative Supreme Court, I mean, ever since the Earl Warren Court, the Supreme Court has been tilting to the right. We have the most right-leaning Supreme Court right now since the 1890s, or since 1913, let's say.
Well, I don't know. We shouldn't have so much discussion between right and left and liberal and conservative. That's wrong. I mean, we're supposed to be fighting for the United States, not between the people within the country.
But the reality, Helen, is that there are two different visions of America. And this is a very real reality. And frankly, I think that it's a good thing that we should have an adversarial system in the United States. But you have the conservative view that says that corporate power and wealth and an aristocratic ruling class, as long as it's not called that, is a good thing because it provides stability.
Well,
and
can I say just one more thing? And
certainly.
Then I'll go.
Certainly.
The thing that's upsetting me is that the terrible things that they're talking about, CBS and Dan Rather.
Yeah.
What difference does it make? Somebody was a whistleblower. They gave the information. Unfortunately, it was not a document that could be corroborated, and they're making a big deal over it, and they want to fire them and get rid of CBS. And I think all that stuff is just dirt.
Yeah, I agree. And increasingly, it's looking like the source of that document was a conservative.
Yeah, so, I don't care whether it was a document that they couldn't provide. But as far as I'm concerned, I think the document was valid, even though they're claiming it was invalid because they couldn't document it on an original.
Yeah.
And thank you so much, Tom. Keep up the good work.
I'll do my very best, Helen, and thank you so kindly for calling in. It's great to hear from you there in Virginia. Helen just raised so many great issues, and this really is, though, the dynamic tension. I mean, there really is a conservative view of America as put forward by the cons, and a liberal view of America is, I think, best articulated by Franklin Roosevelt, and there is something to be said for both, but ultimately we have to have some semblance of balance in this country that preserves the middle class. Stick around.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
A hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Just wanted to remind you, the Gallup poll apparently samples 40% Republicans, 33% Democrats, and then everybody wonders why there seem to be more Republicans saying that they like George Bush in the Gallup polls than in other polls. Might want to share that with your friends. Might want to bring it up with the Gallup organization for that matter. I'm going to follow up on this next week when I get back from this trip here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bill in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line with us. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So there's a great scene in this new movie about Howard Zinn. You can't be neutral on a moving train.
Uh-huh.
And so he's addressing a crowd of peace protesters protesting against the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
This was way back during the Vietnam War. And he says that that we aren't disturbing the peace, we're disturbing their war.
Yeah.
And so the protesters in the streets are, you know, concerned about the direction of the country. You know, we aren't out to raise heck.
Well, we are out to raise heck, or to raise hell if you want to be, you know. I think I can say that on the radio, and it's, you know, generally I stay away from profanity, but we need to raise some hell. I mean, it's Howard Beale time. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Go out, raise your window, stick your head out in the sand. That's where we're at, Bill, because people are dying. George, you know, Bill Clinton lied, and nobody died. George Bush lied, and some 40,000 human beings have lost their lives.
Yeah, it's a real shame, you know, that we've got this war against innocent people now, and Bush is parading around like he's a war hero.
Yeah, he's you've got Kofi Annan saying he's a war criminal, although they're trying to pedal away from that. But it's an open secret. And then he goes before the UN and he has the audacity to lecture them. You know, not going in and saying, you know, we could use some help here, but instead, you know, the nations of the world must. I remember seeing. Did I just hear him say must? It must do this. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, come on, George. This isn't how you talk to your peers. This isn't how you talk to other heads of state. You don't lecture them. You don't wag your finger in their face. Maybe you can get away with that with Colin Powell, but you can't do that with Vladimir Putin and the rest of the world. So, Bill, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to hear from you, and keep listening there on KTRC in Santa Fe. Boy, so much to do, so much to do, and we can do it. I mean, I believe, I am absolutely convinced it is possible for us to recover an America of, by, and for we the people. We the people. Get money out of politics. Let's get some, let's get federal funding for elections, for example, as a beginning point, and do away with the rights of human rights for corporations. This is nuts. And then we can do it. And November 2nd is the beginning. It's the beginning.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish. No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Sferchinski, co-chief negotiator for the SSA National Contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Sferchinski said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Sferchinski added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Sferchinski said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Excellent news, Americans. A new way to lie. In a nation that's gone from simple childhood fibs of my dog ate my homework to the more nefarious lies of a White House that has sent hundreds of people to die in Iraq on the false claims that Saddam Hussein was about to hit us with weapons of mass destruction, now we have new technology to extend the culture of lying to anyone with a cell phone. Yes, cell phones not only allow you to make calls or even take photographs, but also to join cells of cell phone liars who will help you cheat on your spouse, skip work, or you name it. Take the Alibi and Excuse Club, a network of some 3,400 subscribers, unknown to each other, who are willing to lie for you in exchange for you lying for them when they're in a pinch. Say you want to slip away for a weekend with a lover. What to tell your spouse? No problem. Just send out a message to the Alibi and Excuse group, and you're likely to get a volunteer who will call your spouse, posing as one of your bosses and explaining that you've been dispatched on an emergency sales mission to New York or Paris or Kalamazoo. You pay a fee to join the club, and you're also under some general obligation to return the favor when other members put out the call for a credible lie. Jumping on an entrepreneurial opportunity, others have found ways to add value to the lying phone schemes. For $2.99, for example, you can equip your cell phone to play the sounds of a rasping cough to simulate a lung infection while you're sitting on the beach sipping a cool one. You can also get honking horns and a screaming ambulance to simulate a traffic jam, thus explaining why you can't get home while you're actually chilling at a bar and watching the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, there could be glitches, such as if your spouse joins the same Alibi Club and takes your call for help in creating a lie so you can have an affair. Ouch.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago.
Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Oh, so much in the news, so much going on. Let's start out, in fact, with a conservative alert. As this from rightmarch.com, conservativealerts.com. Alert! Our ad demanding accountability for Dan from Dan Rather in U.S. CBS News is scheduled to be published nationwide in USA Today this Thursday, September 21st, but we still need your help to cover the cost of this ad. Last week, he told our members how Dan Rather and CBS News have been caught red-handed in their blatant bias against President Bush by airing a story based on forged documents. We set up our site so Americans could contact CBS and demand accountability from the media, and 101,056 messages were sent to CBS President Les Moonves and CBS News itself. Now is the time to turn up the heat. You're on the college cutting edge because you bypassed the liberal mainstream media to get the real news. Just like we've done several times before, we're planning to take out another nationwide ad in USA Today, telling the whole country about Dan Rather's liberal anti-Bush bias and telling them to demand that CBS News come clean and rein him in. And to cover the cost of that nationwide ad, we need your help now. We need your help to pay for this full-page ad now, please, from conservativealerts.com. So if you're inclined to bash Dan Rather, that's where you go. In another realm of if I only had a brain, George W. Bush yesterday, referring to John Kerry pointing out that we traded in a dictator, yes, but at least a stable country in the Middle East was representing no threat to anybody. I mean, Syria wasn't saying, please invade them. Iran wasn't saying, please invade them. Saudi Arabia wasn't saying, please invade. I mean, the countries on their borders didn't much care. They knew Saddam Hussein represented no threat. Even Kuwait wasn't saying, please invade them. So anyhow, Kerry points out, well, we traded in a dictator for a bloody mess. I mean, literally a bloody mess, not in the British sense, but or British English sense, but in the sense of some 40,000 people dead now as a result of a poor choice, a failed policy of George W. Bush. By the way, lest I forget, in the last hour somebody had asked how to get a copy of a picture of George W. Bush when he was a cheerleader at Andover. And I just went to google.com and I clicked images. And then I put in the words George Bush cheerleader and clicked search. And the first three pictures that came up, sure enough, pictures of George W. holding a big megaphone with a white T-shirt that says, or sweatshirt that says A Andover Prep. The very first three that come up are George Bush as a cheerleader.
How about that? And, you know, you can see them, too. All you have to do is just go right there, and there it is. So, anyway, just so you know, those of you in search of George W.'s celebrity pictures. So here's what George Bush said yesterday. He said, it's hard to imagine a candidate running for president prefers the stability of a dictatorship to the hope and security of democracy. So this is another one of his phony polarities, his phony, there's only two choices you can make. You have to pick one. I remember back in the old days, it wasn't Dan Rather who was questioning him, but it was Richard Nixon was being questioned by the press. And somebody in the press asked him a particularly pointed question about I think it was right after Agnew had resigned for corruption, Vice President Spiro Agnew. And in my recollection, I could be very wrong on this, but my recollection was the question was something to the effect of, do you continue to have criminals in your administration? And of course, the question implied that there were criminals there. And Nixon gave the guy a funny look and he said, no, and I don't still beat my wife either. You know, it's the old question. Do you still beat your wife? Huh? Yes or no? Yes or no? Do you still beat your wife? Yes or no? No, however you answer it, you're screwed, right? I mean, it's just, there's no answer. And George W., just think for a minute of the gullibility. I'm not going to say stupidity, because I don't think that it's about people being stupid. I think it's that people so want to believe. Deep down inside, we are all idealists. They so want to believe that their president is a good guy and he's telling the truth. They so want to believe it. The gullibility of these hand-picked Republicans who show up for the George W. Bush campaign events, the photo ops. And he goes on TV and he says, faced with a choice between taking the word of a madman dictator or defending the interests of the United States of America, I'll choose, or protecting the citizens of the United, however he says it, I'll choose protecting America every time. And everybody jumps up and bursts into applause, except for those people who are sitting there going, those are the only two choices? What about the choice of keeping Saddam in a box, keeping the inspectors in there, slowly whittling away at him, removing his power, encouraging indigenous democracy movements within the country who will rise up nationwide and overthrow him, as has happened in 70 countries around the world now in the last 80 years? What about that as an option? Why do we have to go in and lose 1,000 soldiers? Why do we have to have our contractors having their heads sawed off? Why do we have to have over 20,000 soldiers injured? Why do we have to kill 30 or 40,000 civilians who had nothing to do with this? Come on, George, tell the truth. Quit these lies. Quit these phony arguments. It's this way or that way. Take your choice. Are you still beating your wife, yes or no? Are you still in favor of democracy, yes or no? Come on, George. We're not that stupid. The choice was not between taking the... It's this way or that way. Take your choice. Are you still beating your wife, yes or no? Are you still in favor of democracy, yes or no? Come on, George. We're not that stupid. The choice was not between taking the word of a madman or defending the United States. You can defend the United States without taking the choice of a madman. Come on, do you really think America is that stupid, George W. Bush? I really think he must think that, because he says it at every single speech he gives. It's called the phony polarity argument, the straw man argument. You set up a phony polarity, two phony choices, and you say, this is it. It's A or B. There is no C. Sorry. or D or E or F or whatever. There's nothing. It's just A or B. But even more bizarre than that, than the false argument, the phony dichotomy, the phony polarity of this, is the absolute raving hypocrisy of this statement. Consider on the 10th of June, George W. Bush introduced Prince Bandar, said, "My friend, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia." Excuse me, but the last time I looked, Saudi Arabia was a dictatorship.
It's hard to imagine a candidate running for president prefers the stability of a dictatorship with the hope and security of democracy.
My friend, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. The last I looked, Hosni Mubarak of Egypt was a dictator. On April 12th of this year, "I'm pleased to welcome my friend Hosni Mubarak to my home, and I always look forward to visiting with him." The last I looked, China was a dictatorship. The Chinese were murdering their own people. They'd murdered over a million Tibetans. Trade unions are outlawed. You stand up in favor of human rights in China, you are put to death. George Bush prefers the stability of the dictatorship in China to the hope and security of democracy. On October 25th of 02, he says, "I want to welcome the president of China to our ranch and to Texas." Well, setting aside the fact that ranches have horses and George W.'s afraid of horses, it used to be a pig farm. I like James Carville calling it a ranchette, but it's 1,600 acres. It's pretty big for a ranchette. "I want to welcome the president of China." And then yesterday, this same man has the audacity. You know, he really does think we're stupid. There's no other possible explanation to think that he can just lie and lie and lie and get away with it. He must really and truly think we are stupid. "It's hard to imagine a candidate running for president prefers the stability of a dictatorship to the hope and security of democracy. I want to welcome the president of China to our ranch and to Texas." Have we gone around the edge, friends? Have we lost it? And now they're keeping Cat Stevens out of the country. Did you catch this in the news? The new stupid. There's no other possible explanation to think that he can just lie and lie and lie and get away with it. He must really and truly think we are stupid. "It's hard to imagine a candidate running for president prefers the stability of a dictatorship to the hope and security of democracy. I want to welcome the president of China to our ranch and to Texas." Have we gone around the edge, friends? Have we lost it? And now they're keeping Cat Stevens out of the country. Did you catch this in the news? The new threat to security is Cat Stevens. Yousef Islam, I think, is his name. They deported him. They put him on a plane and said, "Get out." He did sing Peace Train. He did protest the Vietnam War. And then there's that Morning Is Coming song. It's like, this guy must be some kind of hippie peacenik.
Imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives. Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more...
Yousef Islam, I think, is his name. They deported him. They put him on a plane and said, "Get out." He did sing Peace Train. He did protest the Vietnam War. And then there's that Morning Is Coming song. I mean, you know, it's like, this guy must be some kind of hippie peacenik.
You imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives. Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive...
which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives. Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author of 270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The White House calls it downtime.
And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Folks in the chat room inform me that Cat Stevens agreed with the Ayatollah on the Salman Rushdie fatwa. Well, if that's the case, I don't know. And when we were faced with terror in the form of economic terror, the terror that was brought upon us by the corporate collapse of the late 1920s as a result of the massive corporate excesses of the era from the 1880s until the 1920s, late 1920s, resulting in the Great Depression. The terror of joblessness, the terror of homelessness, the terror of lack of medical care, of the lack of pensions. When we were faced with the terror in the form of economic terror, the terror that was brought upon us by the corporate collapse of the late 1920s as a result of the massive corporate excesses of the era from the 1880s until the 1920s, late 1920s, resulting in the Great Depression. The terror of joblessness, the terror of homelessness, the terror of lack of medical care, of the lack of pensions. When we were faced with the terror of being attacked by Japan, the possibility, I mean, the Japanese actually successfully bombed the United States of America, not just in Hawaii, but the continental United States of America. Most Americans to this day don't know this story. It's not that it's a secret, but it was a secret back then. Roosevelt knew about it, though. The Japanese had taken balloons, I mean, come down and set on fire our forests. They wanted to set ablaze the northwestern United States. And they succeeded in some places, as the people in the Northwest will tell you. And you can imagine if under this administration anything at all like that had happened, they would be screaming it from the top of the houses. Oh, look at what they've done. We need to pass more laws. We need to take away more civil rights. We need to make, you know. Roosevelt came out and said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Consider that. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. In other words, in the face of terrorism, we are going to refuse to be terrorized. We are absolutely going to refuse to be terrorized. What did George W. Bush say? Well, even at the RNC.
Morning, the evil terrorists. September the 11th. Danger. Doom. Danger. Doom. Killers. Be afraid. Evil. The world will drift toward tragedy. Tragedy. May God bless you. Evil. God. Iraq.
Can you imagine Franklin Roosevelt talking like this?
God. The continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. September the 11th. God. Evil. We have fought the terrorists across the earth. Evil. God.
Yeah, it's the biggest act of terrorism that's happening in the United States in my opinion right now is the ongoing terrorizing of the American people by this kind of rhetoric.
A gathering threat, and Al Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Free Afghanistan, terror, Pakistan, terrorists, Saudi Arabia, Libya, weapons programs, Saddam Hussein, terror, weapons of mass destruction. September the 11th.
It's the Tom Hartman program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Saddam Hussein, we saw a threat.
Stick around, we'll be back.
The dictator, Saddam Hussein, God, murderous regimes of Saddam Hussein. Afghanistan terrorists, Iraq, Afghanistan and Iraq. God, fight terrorists.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. How do you tell if an air purifier is worth what you paid for it? Well, place a balloon over it. If the balloon flies up in the air, like it does with an Orrick air purifier, that's pure fresh air pushing it. But if it falls to the floor, there's virtually no air movement. Try my Orrick air purifier free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Remember, if the balloon doesn't fly, I wouldn't buy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free energy to get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time.
Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take it.
Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the phone. Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Pretty good, Tom. Hey, listen, got a concern here based on the comments you were making right before the bottom of the hour. I think that what the Republicans would respond, what the neocons would respond to your comment is like, well, you know, George Bush says let's fight them overseas, and what Franklin Roosevelt did was start Manzanar.
Would start what?
Manzanar.
What's Manzanar? I'm sorry.
Oh, that was the primary Japanese concentration camp for Japanese Americans.
Yeah.
Including Japanese American citizens of Japanese descent.
Yeah, it was a terrible thing. It was a terrible thing that Roosevelt did.
And I guess my concern is that if we don't acknowledge that, or we try and basically say what would Roosevelt do? Well, that's what Roosevelt did. And I know the neocons, these guys will take advantage of every slip we make, Tom.
Yeah, and you know, to give history its due, if nothing else. I mean, there was posters, loose lips sink ships.
Sink ships, right.
The whole thing of, you know, you never know, the next guy over might be a spy. But this was when we were in a full-blown shooting war with a country that had declared war on us. Well, the Al-Qaeda declared war on us. Al-Qaeda's not a country.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's my point. I just wanted to clarify that, because if there's any of the neocons out there taking notes for the talking points for tomorrow's right-wing shows, the last thing we need is for them to say, oh, well, you see, Roosevelt did X, and we're not anywhere near that bad.
Yeah.
When these guys are much worse, and it's a different time.
Yeah. But, you know, here's the thing. The whole issue of terror alerts, are we at yellow, are we at orange? It's our government is telling us how much terror we should have.
Sure.
And you know, this is, in my mind, this is a dimension of terrorism. It's a very different thing from saying, you know, the terror alert is it's an Orwellian thing. It's a very different thing from saying, you know, be careful about who you talk to and what you talk about if you happen to have knowledge of national security. In other words, if you work in a defense plant.
Sure.
If you're, everybody who works in defense plants knows this stuff anyway. But, I mean, you know, if you work in a defense plant, it's just a whole separate thing. You raise a good point, Chuck. It's not entirely black and white, and Roosevelt wasn't entirely good, and these guys aren't entirely bad. And yeah, okay. I'll acknowledge that. Thanks for setting this record
straight. I personally think Roosevelt was at least 95% good, maybe 5% bad. And I think it's probably the other way around with these guys. I just like to be clear, because I don't want to give these guys any talking points.
Yeah, good point. And I stand corrected, and I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Chuck. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. In the bad old days, yes, writes Bush Green Watch, rural people with limited ways to make a living were told they had a choice, jobs or a healthy environment. But even that heartbreaking choice has disappeared, writes Bush Green Watch today, for West Virginia's coal country residents. Key changes in coal mining regulations by the Bush administration have fueled a boom in a devastating method known as mountaintop removal, which is not only blasting mountaintops to smithereens and wreaking environmental havoc, but is also shattering countless lives and communities. Despite the devastating impact on citizens in the United States, the Bush administration has taken a series of measures to make it even easier for corporations to continue the blasting. In March 2002, the administration reclassified mining waste and debris as fill, thereby freeing companies from restraints under the Clean Water Act. Last spring, new guidelines were promulgated to allow coal companies to dig trenches as substitutes for streams that were buried under waste. Isn't that sweet? You can't have a river anymore. You can't have a stream. But you can have a trench through our coal waste. Administration officials also intervened to block a federal scientific panel from recommending limits on the size of mountaintop removal projects. Another administration clarification of the Clean Water Act would exempt coal companies from a 20-year-old rule barring mining from within 100 feet of a stream. Still in the works, a proposal to reduce the obligation of the federal government to monitor state mining agencies. Certain oversight duties would become not required, but discretionary. It would be nice to have clean water, and you can look out for it if you would like. But you're not required to. Mountaintop removal removes jobs in entire communities, says Julia Bond of Coal River Mountain Watch, whose family has lived in the area for nine generations. Bond's, a grandmother who has led a grassroots effort to stop mountaintop removal, told Bush Green Watch that those who, quote, talk about jobs are not telling the entire truth, end quote. She noted that an underground mine used to employ 100 to 150 people, while mountaintop operations, which use massive equipment and high explosives, get by with 25. So it's not about jobs. It's about corporate profits. Show me the prosperity, she says. Show it to me, please. I can't find it anywhere. These huge machines, they don't live in our communities. They don't pay taxes. They don't buy in local stores. But they sure can't efficiently take the top off a mountain. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 21 minutes, 20 minutes before the hour. Ellen Ratner's on the line with our call from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, what's happening?
Well, I just spent the last hour, which is why I'm at a different time, listening to McCain, Feingold, Shays, and Meehan talk about their 527 Reform Act. And as you know, they are very upset about how people have been able to just send tons of soft money. They said whether it means the Swift Boat veterans or the media fund on the Democratic side, that people are trying to circumvent the law, and they're particularly angry at what they say are two commissioners at the FEC who are circumventing the law, particularly Weintraub and Smith. Weintraub from the Democratic side, Smith from the Republican side. They said that their violations are violations essentially of the law. And McCain said, we're not going to play their game and enable their loopholes. He said, we're not going to let 8 years of work go down the drain because of unelected officials. He said he doesn't mind negative ads, said he's been the recipient of them for a long time. And actually, Senator Lieberman, who was also there, said, listen, he's happy to be in the losers club with Senator McCain. And Senator McCain certainly has been the recipient of negative ads. He said, listen, if George Soros wants to put, or in fact, one of the Wiley brothers from the Republican side want to put their money on an ad and spend, you know, $1 million on an ad or $500,000 on an ad, so be it. But then let them attach their name to it.
Right.
They can't be using the 527s essentially to circumvent the law.
Yeah. And what's going to come out of this, Ellen?
Well, I actually think, I mean, they were pretty hopeful. And we asked them some pretty tough questions. But they're very hopeful that they can, in fact, make a difference. That they, first of all, they're going to go to court and see if...
You mean in time for this election?
Well, they're hoping to, yes.
Hmm, that's interesting, because the Swift Boat guys have already done their damage. They spent their money. And I know that the, I'm guessing that the Democratic guys, the MoveOn.org bunch, that they're waiting for the last couple of weeks before the election, that that's when they're going to drop their big spending, because they've got a pile of money that they haven't spent yet.
Well, they're using a lot of it to get out the vote. And he's saying that that kind of thing has got to come from parties.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that it really does need to, and that they also want to overhaul the Federal Election Commission.
Did anybody raise the question, whatever happened to freedom of speech, that, you know, citizens can do anything they want?
Well, yes, and that's where he said. He said, listen, if somebody wants to take out an ad and, you know, basically say they approve this message, if George Soros wants to take a full-page ad out in the New York Times or one Swift Boat person, that's fine. When you put it together in a group and you run it through a 527, it is designed, and you can take money anonymously, then that is not the spirit and letter of the law. And that is not what they're trying to do. If somebody's willing to put their own money into an ad, he said, nobody's stopping. It's not a freedom of speech issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in other words, we could end up in a situation where only the richest people in America would have the legal right to speak out on political issues.
Well, no, he said, also said he doesn't mind if a bunch of poor people, he said, listen, if the NRA wants to get $25 contributions from each of its members and to do an ad, that's fine, because it would be hard money within the law. He's concerned about people who can give anonymously $100, $200, $300, whatever, $1,000, not have their name listed as to who's funding it, do it anonymously, and put out an ad. He has no problems with the 527 using money within the campaign contribution limits, which is, you know, $2,000 or whatever, whatever.
So the anonymous part of it is what they object to.
It's the anonymous and the lack of limits. So that only that rich people can buy ads, and that he says he doesn't have any problem with a membership organization trying to get, you know, $25 per head and buying an ad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then, you know, why doesn't ACT just redefine itself as a or MoveOn.org redefine itself as a membership organization?
Well, they could, but then the question is, according to Chasmey and McCain, Feingold, Lieberman, is yes, that's all true. But then what happens is they can, but you should still have campaign contributions because you could have a member like one of the Swift Boat underwriters or George Soros, and they could say, hey, we're going to give $100,000 because we're members.
Right. What's wrong with that?
So he wants within limits, within the campaign limits.
This $2,000 per person limit. They want to keep everything to that.
That's right.
Unless you're an individual and you're spending your own money.
Right. Now, you can give $25,000 to parties.
See, why shouldn't individuals who are spending their own money also be restricted? I mean, I would think the people on the right would say we don't want George Soros spending $10 million on ads, and the people on the left saying we don't want the heirs of the Walton family spending $10 million or $100 million on ads. This is really messy, isn't it?
Well, it is messy, but the issue of individuals, he said, you know, that he thought that the actual ads from the candidates had gotten a little less nasty because they have to say, I'm George Bush or I'm John Kerry and I approve this message. That if you say, I'm George Soros and I approve this message, well, George Soros is going to be, or somebody on the right, is going to have to be responsible for the message that they pay for.
Right, but they're not running for political office, so they don't care about the fallout. They may be perfectly willing to be nasty or even to lie.
Well, that's totally true. However, the other issue in terms of the free speech issue is you can't prevent somebody from taking an ad out in a newspaper, on television, or whatever, because there is freedom of speech in this country.
Well, we barred advertising for tobacco products from television. Why not bar advertising for politics from television?
Well, that would be interesting. I don't think it's going to pass in our lifetime, but who would ever think that this was going to pass?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reason it's not going to pass is because the television industry makes about $1 billion every 4 years in aggregate on political advertising over two
right.
election
and
cycles.
He basically also said that in terms of the 527s, that they've spent, I don't have the exact figure, I think it's $260 million so far in 527 ads. That's just advertising campaign ads.
Yeah.
So you're talking about $250 million of just 527 money. You're not even talking about all the legit hard money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of change.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's a system that they have in England where if you're running for the House of Commons, you can't spend over £100,000. You know, $130,000. And if anybody runs any ads that are in support of you or your positions or anything like that, that's just considered, you know, toward your total that you can't spend. And so people don't do that because that would then cut down on your ability to, you know, have control over your own spending. People in the United States say, well, that's a violation of the First Amendment. You know, what about fully federally funded campaigns? If everybody was to check that little box and the amount was raised to $5, then we would have, the federal government would be able to pass out more money than was spent in the entire 2000 election cycle. But people are afraid of that, you know, because then the government is controlling the money. This is a tough one. This is
It is a very, very tough one. One other quick thing, and then I'm a little late today, as you know.
Oh, that's okay. We've only got a minute and a half left in the segment.
And that is that Verizon was on Capitol Hill yesterday saying that they do not want to contribute or have any of the Verizon cell phone numbers contributing to a national 411 directory. The other companies have said that they are willing to do that, and a lot of people, as you know, use their cell phone as their major phone line.
Right.
And people could opt out of it. But Verizon said, well, they haven't gotten any letters from people saying they want to be part of a 411 directory.
Plus, it's a profit center for them.
Well, it is, but apparently they don't want to invest in the infrastructure.
Interesting. Interesting. Ellen, thanks a lot for the report.
You're welcome. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow. Ellen Radner, the Talk Radio News Service. Great to hear from you, Ellen. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.